पितम येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदाम ददाति स्वपदांतिकम। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू द भक्ति शास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द मिडल ऑफ द 19 चैप्टर्स ऑफ द नेक्टर ऑफ डिवोशन। लेट्स बिगिन विद द 10th चैप्टर। वी आर डिस्कसिंग द 64 आइटम्स ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस एंड दिस चैप्टर श्री प्रभुपाद टाइटल्स अस द टेक्निक्स ऑफ हियरिंग एंड रिमेंबरिंग। सो इन द नेक्टर ऑफ डिवोशन इटसेल्फ the division is differently. It is primarily in terms of eastern side, western side, and within that there are waves. So this chapter division is primarily Srila Prabhupada's division, and titles are also given by him. So here basically there is primarily talking about Shravanam and then Smaranam. This is Tatkrapekshanam, expecting the Lord's mercy. Then this is Smaranam and Mananam. This is remembrance, and this is deeper remembrance, that is meditation. So we look at each of these one by one. Shravanam is the first among the processes of devotional service as described by Prahlad Maharaj. So Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam. Shravanam, so it's the first, and basically Shravanam means that we hear from advanced devotees, and there are three references given over here. And the Shravanam can be of different things. Normally we think Shravanam means hearing of Krishna Katha, but actually even Kirtan that is there, you know, when advanced devotees sing Krishna's names, even hearing them singing, that is also Shravanam. Of course generally when that happens, there is Kirtanam also. That means the advanced devotees sing the Kirtan and then we repeat it. So that's why it can be called Kirtan. But Shravanam applies to that also. When we hear not only the pure devotees speak about Krishna, but when they sing about Krishna, hearing that also is purifying. So here we will see three references are given, and each of these talks about one specific different thing. So there can be Nama Shravan, there can be Charita Shravan, and then can be Guna Adi Shravanam. So Nama Shravana means hearing about the holy name. So Srila Prabhupada explains, he used the example from the Garuda Purana over here, that just as a person who is unconscious, that can be because of a snake bite, that unconsciousness can be countered and the person can be brought back to consciousness by the sound of mantras. So similarly, we are all spiritually unconscious. We are bitten by the snake of illusion. Samsara sarpa vishadigda maho grativra damishtragra koti paridashta vinashta murte nagari vahane sudhabdi nivas shaure lakshmi narsimha mamadehi karamalambam. So this metaphor of material existence being compared to a snake bite is quite common. And this verse which I recited is different from the Garuda Purana reference, but the point is similar, that material existence is like a snake bite. Samsara sarpa, so samsara is like a sarpa, vishadigdha, very poisonous, maho gratibra, extremely frightening, and ugra is horrible, and tivra is very sharp, maho gratibra, damshtra is teeth, agra is the front part, sharp fangs are there. And how many fangs are there? Normally, even if a snake has one fang, it is dangerous. If it has four fangs, it's even more dangerous. But this has koti paridashta murte koti. Actually, practically every alluring sense object is like a fang of material existence. Because what does that sense object do? When we dhyayato vishayan pumsa, when we meditate on the sense object, then tuck, the enjoying mentality gets injected into our consciousness. And that enjoying mentality poisons our spiritual awareness. And the more a person gets injected with enjoying mentality, the more that person becomes unconscious of spiritual reality. So all of us are in that way unconscious, because not only in this life, but even in previous lives, we have been bitten by so many snake bites. And some of the examples that are given in the scriptures, we may not be able to immediately comprehend them, because we live in a different culture. So we normally, if there is somebody who gets a snake bite, normally we will go to a doctor or we'll get an antidote, and some injection will be given. That's how we will cure it. But in the Vedic culture, it is understood that sound has a connection with everything. And the connection of sound with the effect on the body is something which is being increasingly researched by scientists. So we know that just as the sound can pacify a person, you know, when people are agitated, people hear music. Not even just devotees hearing devotional music, but even materialistic people, if they hear some relaxing music, they feel relaxed. In fact, they call it as a relaxing music. So sound has effects, subtle effects. So one of the effects of sound is that when a person is poisoned, actually by chanting specific mantras, that effect of poison can be countered. Now, it's very subtle and it's not ordinary. There are specific sounds need to be chanted in a specific way. Then the poison gets countered out. So that is an example which we will not be able to comprehend immediately. But the principle we can understand, that just as an unconscious person can be brought back to consciousness in that case of a snake bite through a mantra. Similarly, by the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, a person can be brought back from unconsciousness to consciousness. So this is an example of Nama Shravana. That means hearing about the name, hearing the name of Krishna. So there can be different kinds of hearing. Let's look at the next reference now. So in the next reference, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is Mahashukadeva Goswami Tali Parishad Maharaj. And this is about about the transcendental activities of the Lord. So this is Charita Shravana. The character of the Lord, the pastimes of the Lord, the transcendental activities. So it's just like from the moon-like faces of great devotees, what happens? This is a nectarian river flowing and one hears it and by that one becomes free from material miseries. And then Prabhupada gives general philosophical background to explain how hearing is important. And then lastly, this is Gunadishravana. So here about the transcendental qualities about the Lord. Now this is a small differentiation. It's not a very serious differentiation in the sense that there can be overlapping categories. But we can generally understand that there is Nama Shravana, there is Charitadishravana, and there is Gunashravana. So these are all related to the Supreme Lord, and there is a continuity also, and there is a distinctiveness also in it. The essential point is hearing about Krishna is extremely important. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord Chaitanya is instructing the Goswamis, he describes how hearing and chanting is like watering the Bhakti Lata beach, so that once it starts growing, then also it needs water. Shravana Sakirtana Sinchana, he says. It's Sinchana, it's watering the tree, watering the Bhaktilata, the creeper of devotion. Now after this, the next item is expecting the mercy of the Lord. That is Tat Krupekshanam, Tat Krupa, the Krupa of the Lord, expecting it. Now this is interesting. Tat Krupekshanam means what? Actually we understand that Bhakti is a path of grace. We cannot make spiritual advancement just by our endeavors. Our endeavors are no doubt very important. Very, very important. But along with doing our endeavors, we also need Krishna's mercy. Our endeavors are basically to show Krishna that we want his mercy. So as devotees, we expect Lord's mercy. So the example often is given of Chataka bird. How it waits for the water to come from the sky. And when the water comes from the sky, it gets nourishment by that. All the water is available elsewhere, it doesn't take. So like that, a devotee expects the Lord's mercy. And here, Rupa Goswami quotes the famous verse from the prayers of Brahmaji in the 10th canto. Tattenu kampam sasamikshamano bhunjane vatmakritam vipakam ridvagvaburbhir vididam namaste jivetayo mukti pade sadai bhag. So tattenu kampam, that your anukampa, your mercy, Susami ikshamano is eyeing, waiting for. Bhunjaneva atmakritam vipakam. Bhunjan means undergoing. One is undergoing various, when a devotee is suffering, undergoing miseries, what is a devotee? Atmakritam vipakam. One thing is Atmakritam. It is because of my own bad deeds that I am getting the reactions now. So devotee thinks as the karmic sufferings are coming because of my own misdeeds. But what is Krishna's mercy? Krishna is minimizing those sufferings for me. So Krishna is just giving me a sample. And moreover, Krishna is giving me his remembrance by which I can shield myself from those sufferings and I can go deeper into taking his shelter, into his remembrance. And then Rudvag Vapurbhir Vidadam Namaste. Namaste. Namaste means offer obeisances. How? Ridvag Vapurbhir. Ridv is the heart, Vag is speech, Vapu is body. So completely with body, speech and heart, one utterly offers obeisances. Ridvag Vapurbhir Vidadam Namaste. And Jive Tayo, one who lives like this, Muktipade Sadai Bhag, Muktipade, for liberation. Dai Bhag means, this is, Prabhupada translated this as, Dai Bhag means inheritance. So liberation has become the inheritance of such a person. Just like if a person is the child of a billionaire, then whatever is the billionaire's property, the child is going to inherit it. What does the child have to do? The child has to live. The child just lives, then that inheritance will come. Similarly, we just have to live in bhakti. Now, the tribulations that come in life may make us feel like giving up bhakti. But then, we have this devotional disposition. My dear Lord, please have mercy on me. I'm so fallen. Please have mercy on me. So that tat krupa ikshanam, begging for the mercy of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada was once on a morning walk, and at that time they passed by a lake, and there were some birds in the lake, and there was a man who was feeding those birds, and then he was throwing some food crumbs at all the birds, and all the birds were quackling, asking for more and more food crumbs, and he was giving to all of them. And there was one bird which was quacking very fiercely, very fervently, repeatedly, again and again, and the bird was quacking more and more and more, much more than the other birds. And this man was giving more food crumbs to that bird. So Prabhupada said, this is how mercy is given. He said, actually, you know, none of the birds can make any demands. This person is completely free to give the food whoever, whichever bird he wants. And he is completely free to not to give to anyone also. Not bound to give. And then he can give to anyone, is free. But why is this person giving more to this bird? Because this bird is calling out more and more. Calling out more and more. So like that, when we sincerely, urgently call out to Krishna, then Krishna bestows his mercy. Tat krupekshanam. So of course, when a devotee asks for the mercy also, devotee, on one level we understand Krishna has already given me the mercy. What is the mercy? The very opportunity to practice devotional service itself is a great mercy. The very opportunity to be in the association of devotees itself is a great mercy. Along with that, as I get myself absorbed in devotion, as I get taste in devotion, that is a greater mercy. So a devotee is grateful for whatever mercy has been given, and devotee wants, longs for more and more mercy. But then, Srila Prabhupada writes in third canto purport also, a devotee desires but does not demand the mercy of the Lord. Desire is natural because we have devotion or we want to have devotion. Naturally, we want the mercy of the Lord. But at the same time, a devotee does not demand. Demanding is not in the mood of devotion. Krishna is the master and we are the servant. Whenever he wants, he will give. But surely we long for it and we express that longing through our sincere, urgent calling out. Now that calling out is, of course, when we are chanting, we chant urgent, seriously. That is just one way of calling out. But actually our whole life can be a calling out to Krishna. When we do our services, we show Krishna. We do the service responsibly, committedly. We show that. By that, what do we show Krishna? Krishna, I am serious about my relationship with you. I understand that if I am doing this for you, this will please you. So therefore, I will do it and I will do it seriously. I am serious. And when Krishna sees the seriousness, then Krishna bestows his mercy. Tat krupekshanam. So now, it's interesting that many of the other items that we have discussed till now, they were having some tangible activities associated with it. For example, worshipping, bowing down before the deity, or circumambulating the deity, or just before we had hearing. Now, tat krupekshanam, this seems to be a little intangible item, isn't it? Well, it is not associated necessarily with any specific form of devotional service. But the idea is, this is essential. And this can be, because it is distinct and it can often be missing. Now, I can come and sit in the sit and hear a class, or I can go and take darshan, and I may just do it as a ritual. So, to emphasize its importance, Rupa Goswami gives it as a distinct item. Tat krupe kshanam, tat krupa, asking for the mercy of the Lord. Let's move forward now. And here we see the next item is about remembrance. So now, here remembrance and meditation are similar, but the way Rupa Goswami explains is, remembrance is general. So Prabhupada quotes two verses that how remembrance brings all auspiciousness. There are many, many verses about remembrance of the Lord, with the famous verse that we sing at the time of initiation, Om Pavitra Pavitrova Sarva Avastham Gatopya Yasmaret Pundarikaksham Sabhaya Abhyantar Shuchihi Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu, Shri Vishnu. So, Bahya Abhyantar Shuchi, remembrance of Krishna is extremely potent in cleansing us. The way it can cleanse, nothing else can cleanse us. So therefore, remembrance of Krishna is very important. Now, meditation is much, much deeper than remembrance. So the way Rupa Goswami describes meditation, he talks about four kinds of meditation. There is Nama Dhyan, there is Rupa Dhyan, there is Krida Dhyan or Leela Dhyan, and then there is Seva Dhyan. So what are these referring to? Actually, now if you look at the different references which are given, they are all talking about these things in one by one. So I'll just explain. Nama Dhyan means we meditate on the name of the Lord. So we are chanting. Often when we are chanting, it's just a lip service. We are not really concentrating, leave alone meditating. Actually, concentration is one stage, meditation is a deeper stage. Concentration means there is a possibility for distraction, and there is a conscious attempt to focus one's attention. That is concentration. But meditation means one goes so deep inside that one becomes unaware of anything else. So here what Rupa Goswami is talking about is meditation over there. Now, Nama Dhyan. So when devotees absorb themselves in the holy name, they forget everything else. Just to lose awareness of everything. That's what would happen when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and associates would do kirtans. Then they're completely absorbed in that. Nama Dhyan. Like that. Now if we see, and there are different kinds of meditations. Then after that, after Nama Dhyan, there is also Rupa Dhyan. Rupa Dhyan means that one meditates on the form of the Lord. So when we go in front of the deities, then we look at the deities. If we look at the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described how the yogi meditates on each limb of the Supreme Lord. In fact, there's a description of each limb also, right? Starting from the lotus feet, how the lotus feet of the Lord is. And then it moves up to the knees and the thighs and the belly and the chest, which is the abode of Lakshmi Devi as Sri Vatsa. And then it moves to the lips and the nose and the eyes and the forehead. And like that, complete form of the Lord one can meditate on. So, Rupa Dhyan. And when there is, now actually speaking, in the material world, when there is male-female attraction, there is Raganuga Rupa Dhyagan over there. Spontaneously, when a man is attracted to a woman or a woman is attracted to a man, actually, one goes deep into one starts meditating on that constantly. So, of course, that is a meditation. The difference between worldly beauty and Krishna's beauty is that worldly beauty is agitating. Krishna's beauty is pacifying. When we are trying to say that worldly beauty, there is so much pleasure over there looking at. In fact, the whole industry, the movie industry, it focuses on depicting this beauty of the world. And then there is actually, it's attractive, but the end result is it's agitating. It agitates us with sensual desires, it agitates lust within us. And then after the lust is indulged in, if a person indulges in lust, then it's frustrating. So actually, Krishna's beauty is not like that. Krishna's beauty, the more we behold that beauty, what happens is, the lust becomes pacified. It's not agitating, it's pacifying. Now we could say it is in a spiritual sense is agitating, in the sense that the devotees are eager to behold the form of the Lord. But that spiritual hankering is wonderful, because that spiritual hankering purifies us of all material hankerings. In the first canto, when Narad Muni in his previous life is a boy who has lost his mother and then starts doing meditation, and after doing meditation he gets a brief experience of the Lord, and after that when he sees the Lord, actually all his senses get enlivened by the beautiful darshan of the Lord, and then the Lord disappears. He's extremely agitated. So at that time a voice comes, and that voice says that because you are impure at heart and incomplete in service, so therefore you will not be able to see me again. In fact, the Lord says, I regret that you will not be able to see. The Lord is expressing his endear, his sweetness. The Lord wants to reveal himself, but when we are not pure hearted, we can't see him. Just like if somebody might be right in front of us, but if my eyes are closed, then I can't see that person. So what I have to do is, I have to do the endeavor of opening my eyes. So as long as we are impure, that impurity is like the closing of the eyes. We can't see. When the more we become purified, the eyes open and then we can start seeing. So it says that actually you have this one darshan of me, and by this darshan, this will create a constant hankering for me within you. And by this hankering, your worldly hankerings will go away. We all have the power to desire. And that power to desire, if it is directed towards Krishna, then all our other desires get driven away by that. So our process, the process of Bhakti Yoga, is not to empty the heart of desire, of material desires. It is, the process of Bhakti Yoga is to crowd material desires out of our heart. What do? We don't empty material desires from our heart. We crowd material desires out of heart. Crowd means we fill the heart with spiritual desires. And when the heart is filled with spiritual desires, then material desires have left with no place in them. So our focus should not be on speaking no, no, no. Our focus should be on saying yes, yes. And the more we say yes to Krishna and become eager for the different process of devotional service, then the more material desires automatically go away. So could be Krishna's form when we take a darshan, then that actually drives away our material desires and fills up with spiritual desires. And actually the spiritual desires fill us with ecstasy. So that is Rupa Dhyan. And then there is Leela Dhyan or Krida Dhyan, that is meditating on the pastimes of the Lord. So Vishnu Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would do Rupa Dhyan. Sometimes he would just from far away outside the Jagannath temple, practically if we go to Jagannath temple and see where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would stand near the Garuda Stambha, actually it's quite far away. From there it's difficult even to see the Lord very clearly, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so absorbed that even from when he would come in front of the Lord, the whole world would fade away. It would practically disappear for him, and completely absorbed in beholding the form of the Lord. So here this example of Rupa Dhyan. And then there is Leela Dhyan. Leela Dhyan means one becomes so absorbed in hearing the pastimes that one just gets lost, ecstatically lost in that. So that's how this Leela Dhyan. Leela Dhyan means one gets absorbed in the pastimes of the Lord. And we see this in many cases, especially we see this in how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu want to hear the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj and the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, especially 100 times, again, yeah, I want to hear again, because their devotion is so extraordinary. You relish that devotion and want to relish it again and again and again. That is Leela or Krida Dhyan. And then last is actually what all of us need to do the most. We can and should do Naam Dhyan, Rupa Dhyan, Leela, Krida Dhyan, but we can't do it too much, in the sense that if we have to do it all day, then our Dhyan will go into something else only. That's why we have Seva Dhyan. Seva Dhyan means absorption in service. So at one level, Seva Dhyan can be, if one is doing deity worship, then one gets absorbed in the deity. Okay, I have to cook this for, maybe this is, if I decorate this, maybe I can celebrate this festival. We can do this, we can do that. That is Seva Dhyan. One gets absorbed in service to the Lord. And Seva Dhyan can also be different services that we are doing, whatever service we are doing. If a devotee is doing book distribution, a devotee can think, you know, how can I, attract more people. What can I speak? How can I approach? How can I distribute books more? Let me learn from others. So devotee can get absorbed in seva. And whatever service we have, each of that service can become the source of absorption for us. And once we become absorbed in service, then through that absorption we become connected with Krishna. Seva dhyan. So we say Srila Prabhupada was so absorbed in service, constantly thinking of how to share Krishna consciousness with people. And that's why one day he was in San Francisco, he was just in the temple, there's a balcony sort of thing. He was walking in the balcony, chanting, just looked out and he saw a flatbed truck. And what did he think? Oh, we can put Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra and have a Rath Yatra festival over here. Now how many people see a flatbed truck and how many of them will ever think of Jagannath, Baldev, of converting a flatbed truck into Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra cart? That was Srila Prabhupada's genius. He was so absorbed, constantly looking for an opportunity to expand the service of Krishna. Seva dhyan. So devotee, wherever the devotee goes, if you go to some place, Srila Prabhupada would go, when he went to Moscow, he saw some buildings over there. And he thought, oh, in Mayapur, the temple we have, we can have a dome like this. Or wherever he would go, he would see something wonderful, he would think, how can this be used in Krishna's service? So the idea is that a devotee, especially if we are doing seva, then seva dhyan can be a constant way in which we can connect with Krishna. And especially the seva that we can do is whenever we are meeting people, we can be in the mood of serving Krishna. How can I help this person come closer to Krishna? So that meeting can become a form of devotional service if that is our meditation, seva dhyan. And in this way, we can all be absorbed in service. And that's why we see Srila Prabhupada translated bhakti also not just as devotion, but as devotional service. Devotional service. Let's look at the references now. So, Srila Prabhupada used many of the references and not, they are not specifically divided over here the way they are in Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. They are generically mentioned over here. So, on the sweet pastimes, Padma Purana reference, this refers to Leela Dhyan. And then here it talks about remembering the qualities of the Lord. So one of the qualities is beauty. So this can also be used to refer to Rupa Dhyan. And then lastly there is this Seva Dhyan. There is a story, beautiful story from the Brahma Vivad Purana of the Brahmana in Pratishthanapur of how he was doing Manas Puja. So how he was preparing a kheer for the Lord, and when he prepared that kheer, in his mind he was preparing it. But when he was preparing it in the mind, he wanted to check whether he prepared it very lavishly, and then he wanted to check whether it is adequately hot or it is cold or what, and he put his finger in the mind only, and his fingers are burnt actually. And Lord Vishnu with Narayan was watching, and he started smiling. And Lord Vishnu with Lakshmi was there, and then Lakshmi asked, what is happening? And then Lord Vishnu got that devotee back. So just by Manas Puja. So actually Manas Puja is something which you can always do. Even when we are not able to do service, still we can always do Manas Puja. Now of course we should not only do Manas Puja. And we see that the birth of Krishna, normally the Vedic tradition is whenever there is birth, one gives charity to invoke auspiciousness. So at the birth of Krishna, Vasudeva wanted to give a lot of charity. But he couldn't because he was in prison. So in his mind he gave thousands of cows in charity to the Brahmins. And then later on, when Krishna killed Kamsa and restored Vasudeva to his position of power and glory, then Vasudeva actually gave the charity also. So he actually, whatever he desired to do in the mind, he just could not keep it as a desire. The desire expressed itself as action. So that way, whenever we are able to do, we do actions in devotional service. And whenever we are not able to do, then in our heart we desire, let me do this service. And by that way, we can keep ourselves Krishna conscious all the time. So Manas Puja, that means there are two things. Only when it is not possible for us to do physically, then Manas Puja is acceptable. And then whenever the opportunity comes up, we should actually translate that Manas Puja actually into direct also. But this story illustrates that if there is a sincere heart which wants to serve the Lord, then Manas Puja can be so glorious. The Lord becomes so pleased by the sincerity of the devotional attitude that the Lord can elevate and liberate a person for doing service, even in the mind. In fact, one of the characters of Kali Yuga that is described in the 16th chapter of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is that in Kali Yuga, even if a person does bad things, if a person does bad things in the mind, one doesn't get any reaction for that. But if a person does good things in the mind, one gets the benefit for that. That is the speciality of Kali Yuga, and we can tap into that speciality. So now let's move to the... This is the chapter on techniques of hearing and remembering. Let's go to the next chapter now. So, aspects of transcendental service. So, service is servitorship. So, now these are further items of devotional service. And there is Dasyam, Sakhyam and Atma Nivedanam that I talked about over here in this particular chapter. Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atma Nivedanam are what? They are the last three items among the nine forms of devotional service that are mentioned by Prahlad Maharaj. So, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atma Nivedanam. So, the other items have already been mentioned by Rupa Goswami in different ways. Now, he is mentioning these. So, there is Dasyam, Sakhyam and Atma Nivedanam. Now, Dasyam, servitorship can be in two different ways. Let's look at it. So, we can see over here. So, servitorship can be in two ways. Karmarpanam and Kainkaryam. Kainkara means servitorship. The mood of karmarpanam means we do the karma and we offer it to Krishna. And there are two ways. Karmarpanam that we can do is offering the fruits of Varanashram, that will be karma. I'll explain this. And offering the nine main devotional activities. That's Sravanam Kirtan, that is bhakti. Let's try to understand this now. First, let's look at karmarpanam. So, karma arpanam, offering of karma. Swakarmanatam abhyarcha siddhim vindati manavaha. In the 18th chapter, from verses 41 to 48, Krishna talks about how Varanashram can be used as a stepping stone for bhakti. Actually, it is intended for that. It is meant to be lead one to bhakti. So, the mood of Varanashram is whatever is our karma. Swakarmana tam abhyarcha. Worship that Supreme Lord. That is what the purpose of Varanashram is. To worship the Lord. Now, while talking about this, this is not necessarily pure devotion. This is actually depending on the consciousness of the person. Most often it is karma. That means the person is doing the activities within Varanashram, but in offer of those works to the Supreme Lord. So, this technique, so some people consider this also to be bhakti. We see in the hierarchy that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Raya discuss in the Madhya Leela of Srimad Bhagavatam, of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Samvad. There, when Ramananda talks about offering Varanashram, he quotes the famous verse from Vishnu Puran. Varanashram acharvata purushena parapuman Vishnuraradhyate pantha nanyatattoshakaranam. So the purpose of Varanashram is to do Vishnuraradhana and nanyatattoshakaranam. There is no other purpose of Varanashram than the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So what does Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reply? Iha bahya age kahoar. Iha bahya. This is external. Speak further. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considers it to be peripheral. It's also a principle of dharma, but it's a peripheral principle of external principle of dharma. So the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas consider this part of offering one's Varanashram karma to Krishna. It's not exactly pure devotional service. It's one level below. So Srila Prabhupada explains that yes, it can also these people who are offering their their worldly activities, their Varanashram activities to Krishna, because they have some feeling towards Krishna. That's why they are offering those work to Krishna. So that's how it is a part of bhakti, but it's not a part of pure devotion. And the devotional disposition will eventually lead to the advancement towards pure devotion. So we'll see. We discussed in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. We discussed about the various levels at which bhakti can be performed, from 12.8 to 12.12. So there we discussed about how one of the levels is working for Krishna, then another level is offering the fruits of our work to Krishna. So that way there are levels. So this is the in karma arpanam, doing our Varanashram duties and offering them to Krishna is not necessarily considered to be parabhakti, but it is anukul to bhakti and it can help us to advance in bhakti, and that's what we should do. we have to do our varnashram duties, and what we do is we direct those varnashram duties towards Krishna, and by that our material life gets spiritualized. But this differentiation makes it clear that they alone don't constitute bhakti. So people say karma hi puja hai, work is worship. So work is worship. If work is worship, then the donkey is the greatest worshipper, isn't it? Donkey works so hard. Now work is worship is not taught anywhere in the Bhagavad Gita. What is taught is how to make work into worship. It is not that work automatically is worship. So swakarmanatam abhyarcha, by your work worship him. And for that, what do we have to do? We have to have a relationship with Krishna separately. And that relationship is developed through sadhana bhakti. So when we do systematically sadhana bhakti, by that we develop a relationship with Krishna. And then on the foundation of that relationship, then when we do our worldly duties, they can also become a form of worship. That's why we have the morning program. We do our sadhana in the morning. Here, study scripture as much as possible, little bit. And then when we go for work, then that work is, we do that work with the foundation of a spiritualized consciousness, and then that work can also become worship. So in karma arpanam, the other part is offering the ninefold items of devotional service to Krishna. That means one understands that these items are, I'm doing this for Krishna. Iti pumsar pita Vishnu bhaktischena navalakshana kriyeta bhagvatyadha tanmanyeditam uttamam iti pumsar pita Vishnu. That these, when one item one offers to Krishna, then they are the lakshana of bhakti. What has to be done? Pumsarpita Vishnu. One has to offer them to Vishnu. So this is actually bhakti. That means when one comes and hears, one comes and chants, these are activities of bhakti. And then this is both are karma arpanam. Both are, we are doing activities. So I am coming to the temple to hear about Krishna. That is offering of bhakti. And similarly, there can be the worldly duties that I do for Krishna, that is a step towards bhakti. From Rupa Goswami, that's not exactly bhakti. But higher than this is kaikaryam. Kaikaryam means servitorship. In kaikaryam, I offer myself to Krishna. So it's not that I'm doing these activities to Krishna, I'm offering myself to Krishna. It is kaikaryam. So let's look at the limbs over here. So when we talk about kaikaryam, that is identifying oneself as a servant of Krishna and offering oneself, not just one's activities to Krishna, but offering oneself to Krishna. So the word kinkara, actually, if you look at the Sanskrit itself, what it means is kim karoti iti kinkara. Kim karoti, what should I do? So a servant asks the master, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? So kim karoti, what should I do? So kinkara means, and we see this is the mood which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also has, that I Nanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Oh Nanda Tanuja, I am your, oh Lord Krishna, I am your Kinkara, I am your servant. So this is a deeper identification. Now we may say that I am a servant, but how much we feel I am a servant? You know, often, sometimes if somebody calls us and doesn't address us Prabhu, we say, hey, what do you think? Don't you know who I am? So what happens is we still think of ourselves as master. And so the idea is that we are servants and we have to internalize this mood of servitorship. So that is karmarpanam and kaikaryam. Both of these are moods of service. And Prabhupada quotes from Naradiya Purana. In Naradiya Purana, the statement of how the servitorship is transcendental. A person who is constantly engaged in devotional service by his body, mind and words, or even a person who is not practically engaged, but is simply desiring to be so, is considered to be liberated. The idea is that this mood of servitorship can lead eventually to liberation. Then there is Sakhyam. Prabhupada writes, Sakhyam is of two types. The first is to act as a confidential servant of the Lord, and the other is to act as the well-wisher of the Lord. So Vishwasa and Maitri. Rupa Goswami uses these two words. So Vishwasa means, one considers the Lord to be a friend and one has very great confidence. Great confidence. The Lord is my well-wisher, the Lord is my benefactor, the Lord is my protector. And in that, say, one doesn't treat the Lord, although the mood of the Lord be my protector is there, but still the relationship is very intimate. That's why it is considered to be a Sakhya. So here the example is given of Draupadi. So Draupadi, when she calls out for the Lord, she has Vishwas that the Lord will come and protect me. And her relationship with Krishna is not exactly conjugal. She is not a Madhurya. Now she is actually, her relationship is different. So the example is given, not exactly Madhurya like the gopis of Vrindavan, because she has her husbands and they are also devotees. But the idea here is that she is calling out to the Lord with great intensity. And she has confidence that the Lord is going to protect me. So this mood of Vishwasa is a deeper result of faith. We know Shraddha is the beginning stage, Adha Shraddha. So that's the first stage in the nine stages of Bhakti. And from Shraddha we move forward. Then we come to another stage of Bhakti is Nishtha. That's the fifth stage. And the ninth stage is Prem. So actually, all of them, if we see, they are just progressions of faith. Initially, the faith is tender at Shraddha level. Then the Nishtha is very strong. And we may have faith in some person. For example, if I go to a doctor, and I know the doctor is good and doctor can cure me, so I have faith in the doctor. But that doesn't mean I really love that doctor. Now, love is much, much deeper relationship. And of course, in love, trust is implied. Faith is implied. Without that, how can there be love? So that trust is much deeper. So essentially, the process of bhakti is a deepening of faith from the level of Shraddha to the level of prema. So Shraddha is initial, so Vishwas is an advanced level of faith, level of faith. And at the level of Vishwas, one is confident the Lord is my protector. And then Lord is my well-wisher. Now Srila Prabhupada gives a special twist to this and he says that not only is the Lord the devotee's well-wisher, but when the devotee starts preaching Krishna consciousness, the devotee becomes the Lord's well-wisher. What does it mean? Let's see how Prabhupada explains this. That so the Prabhupada quotes that in the Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita, which tasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakrutta mahabhitajala tasman anya priyataro bhuvi. So he says that there's no one more dear to me than one who is preacher. So Name, this is a famous verse. Kunti Ma, Draupadi is quoting Name Bhakta Pranashyati. Then she quotes it and she says, just by remembering this, I am able to pranan sandharamyaham. That I am able to maintain my life by remembering that he will always protect me. So the other is Maitri. Maitri means very intimate relationship with the Lord. So Prabhupada writes over here, sometimes it is found that a pure devotee lies down in the temple of the Lord in order to serve him in confidential friendship, as a confidential friend. That means that, now normally when we go to the temple, we lie down to offer dandavat, but we don't lie down to go to sleep over there. Of course, in some cases, it may that in the temple hall, if there is no place, some devotee may sleep in the temple at night. But that is different, not when the Lord is giving darshan, that time nobody is supposed to sleep. Sometimes people offer dandavat and they are so tired while doing dandavat they go to sleep. You know, that is not at all a good thing to do. But sometimes when the devotee has a very intimate relationship with the Lord, when we are in the presence of the deities, we should be sitting attentively in attention, remembering that the Lord himself is present over here. And the whole idea is a mood of reverence is important for us to develop our relationship properly with the Lord. But then as the relationship with the Lord becomes more and more intimate, then the devotee may do something like this, which normally anyone will not do. We see that normally as sadhakas, we consider great fortune if we can get the dust of our feet, dust of the Lord's feet on our head, we can touch the feet of the Lord. But then, what do the gopas do? The gopas ask Krishna to, if they wrestle, and when Krishna is defeated sometimes in wrestling as a part of the leela. In fact, in Gopal Champu, he describes Jiva Goswami actually what happens when Krishna defeats all the wrestlers of Kamsa. Mushtika cha, Mushtika Sura Chanura Malla Yuddha Visharada. So, Malla Yuddha, they were very Visharada, very expert in Malla Yuddha, but he just defeated them completely. And after defeating them, what happened then? Then Krishna called all his Gopa friends. And he wrestled with them. And when wrestling with them, all the Gopa friends defeated Krishna. And Kamsa, you know, his brain just went haywire. He says, what is this? My wrestlers, this boy, Krishna defeated, and this simple cowherd boy, they have defeated Krishna. What is this? He just couldn't figure it out. So when Krishna gets defeated in the wrestling match, then Krishna is expected to, as a punishment, carry the gopas. So when they carry the gopas, what is happening? Their feet is touching the Lord's body. Now that is scandalous. Normally we cannot let our feet touch any sacred object. Even a book is, our feet should not, if a book like Bhagavata, our feet should not touch. What to speak of the deity? And then what to speak of the Lord Himself? But the gopas do that, and that is maitri, that's an intimate relationship. So this is also one item of devotional service, to have the mood that the Lord is a very close friend of mine. Again, this is very advanced and we cannot prematurely jump to it. But just as when there are two very close friends, if one friend is in trouble, then the other friend knows, this friend knows that my friend will come to help me. So like that, the devotee has faith. At least we can try to act on the level of Vishwas. Yes, the Lord will come to help me. And then the next item is Atmanivedanam. Atmanivedanam. So now, Prabhupada explains that according to different authorities, self is differently defined. Self is sometimes considered to refer to the spirit self or soul. Self is considered to refer to the mind or to the body. So then, depending on what the self is referring to, Atmanivedanam can refer to actually surrender of the body. It can refer to surrender of the mind, or it can be surrender of the soul. So all three are self-surrender. So self-surrender, all three are glorious. Atmanivedanam. Now we see the example that is normally given of, it's a Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj, what did he literally do? With the first two steps, Lord Vishnu offered, Lord Vishnu expanded, and Vamandev, when he had come, he expanded and he covered the whole universe. And then nothing was left. Then Bali Maharaj offered his body. He practically offered his head and he said, put your third foot on my head. So the idea is that he offered his body over there. So of course we can say that while offering the body, he also had the mood of offering his entire existence. That is true. Essentially what he offered there was the body. So there can be offering of the body, that is also Atmanivedan. Offering of the mind, that is also Atmanivedan. And offering of the complete of the Atma itself, that is also Atmanivedan. So now here we'll see. Prabhupada quotes over here that my mind, my household affairs, my body, whatever is in my possession, my dear Lord, I offer to you for your service. He's offering complete surrender. Entire existence is offering. Then here also Yamunacharya is saying that whatever species I go through, but I do not mind it, because this body is simply byproduct of the material nature, and I who am in possession of these bodies, I am surrendering myself unto you. So here he is saying that I surrender unto you. That means the idea is that whichever be the body, I surrender unto you. So it's not the body that is being surrendered, it's I who am being surrendered. And Prabhupada, now this example is, he's giving mind as well as body, but this example has manasa deho geho, jokichu mohar. This can be an example of surrender of the mind. And then Hari Bhakti Vivek Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami is quoting over here, and Prabhupada is repeating, as a soul animal has no need to think about his maintenance and sustenance, so because I have given up my body and soul unto you, I am no longer concerned with my maintenance and sustenance. So now this is the example which Prabhupada says can offer his body in self-surrender. Now again, in these, the important point is not to do a hair-splitting analysis. It's not that sometimes I'll offer my body and not offer my heart, I'll offer my mind and not offer my body. That's not the point. This is for us to understand from analytical perspective how Atmanivedan can be done. So generally when the Atmanivedan is done, often it is that the body, mind and the self, everything is offered. But there can be different levels of offering, and to help us understand how to deepen our surrender, this sort of analysis can be done. But specific references, the important point to learn from the references is the principle of surrender. Now after Atmanivedan, then there is offering a favorite article. Offering a favorite article refers to Nijapriyo Upaharanam. Nijapriya Upaharanam. Nijapriya Upahar. What is very dear, we offer. So Prabhupada quotes from the quote from the Uddhava Gita is here from Rupa Goswami. Somebody offers me the best thing in his possession or anything which is very pleasing to him, he will be eternally benefited. So what does this mean? Now this offering the favorite thing can refer to two things. Now how do I decide what is favorite? You know, when I offer something favorite, it can be something that is favorite for me or something that is favorite for Krishna. So both are included in this. Nijapriyopaharanam. What does it mean? If I, for example, we know from, say, the Goswami literature that Krishna loves food items, then we can cook those food items and offer to Krishna. And that is Nijapriyopaharanam. And similarly, there is something which is very dear to us and which you value very much, and then we offer that to Krishna. So when we offer that to Krishna, that is also a form of devotional service. See, basically the point is that we want to have a heart-to-heart connection with Krishna. So that which is in Krishna's heart we offer to him, that is very pleasing to Krishna. And when that which is in our heart we offer to him, that is also pleasing, because by that our heart is getting linked with Krishna. So the idea is to connect ourselves with Krishna more and more. And Nijapriyopaharanam enables us to do that. And then there is performing all endeavors for Krishna. So, Akhila Krishna Artha Cheshta, like that. All the endeavors one does for Krishna's sake. So, Prabhupada gives an example over here. A devotee who has a great establishment of a factory may offer the fruits of such material possession for the service of the Lord. So, this is talking about how when we do the work, we offer the fruits of the work to Krishna. Now, Atma Nivedan, and here Sharanagati or Sharanapatti. So, there are two examples from Hari Bhakti Vilas and Narasimha Purana. Now, what is the difference between that earlier and this one? Sharanagati and Atma Nivedan is similar, but Sharanagati is deeper. Sometimes when we do Atma Nivedan without the attitude of surrender, one is offering oneself because one is obliged to or because one is expected to. But Sharanagati means wholeheartedly one offers oneself, the Supreme Lord. And then after that there is serving trees such as Tulsi. This is an important limb of devotional service. And then Prabhupada quotes from the Skanda Purana as well as other places. What is the glory of serving Tulsi Devi? Simply by Prabhupada quotes from Skanda Purana, simply by seeing, simply by touching, simply by remembering, simply by praying to, simply by bowing before, simply by hearing about, simply by sowing this tree. There is always auspiciousness. Anyone who comes into contact with the Tulsi tree in the above mentioned ways lives eternally in the Vaikuntha planet. So now Tulsi, what does it? Tulsi is actually a manifestation of the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, Radharani. And there is a festival of Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha. Shalagram is a form of Vishnu and Tulsi is a form of the consort of the Lord. Ultimately she is so all the devis, all the gopis in the spiritual world, they are expansions of Radharani. And Tulsi is also one of the expansions. So Tulsi Shalagraham Vivaha basically represents the union of the Lord and his greatest devotee. And when we worship Tulsi, Tulsi is the giver of bhakti. Just as Radharani is the giver of bhakti, Tulsi is the giver of bhakti. And by worshipping Krishna, Tulsi Devi, we actually make a lot of spiritual advancement. Now nowadays, or in general also, in the past also, some people value Tulsi because they consider it has a lot of medicinal value. Oh, Tulsi, medicinal value is there. So, I'll take Tulsi. Now, the medicinal value is a side thing for devotees. There may be medicinal value, and when devotees take Tulsi, they don't take it because it's medicinal value. They take it, it's offered to Krishna, it's dear to Krishna. And that's why this is actually Krishna's mercy manifesting. And that's why we take Tulsi. Now, some devotees say that because Tulsi is actually manifestation of, it's just special to Krishna, manifestation of the expanded manifestation of Radharani. So actually they say we should not chew Tulsi. We should just suck and swallow Tulsi. That's not necessary like that. One can chew also. The idea is there are different forms of Krishna and we reciprocate with them in different ways. Now if you say then chapati is also Krishna only, then prasad is not different from Krishna. So can I say because it is Krishna, how can I chew Krishna? But then how will I eat chapati then? So there are different ways in which you reciprocate with the different manifestations of Krishna. So Tulsi we can take and we can respectfully honor Tulsi. When we take prasad, we don't say we are eating prasad, we are honoring prasad. Honoring means Krishna is manifesting, and when we eat, we are honoring Krishna's manifestation as prasad. And that way, we can make a lot of spiritual advancement. So these are all the limbs of devotional, items of devotional service, through which we can make swift spiritual advancement. We'll continue this discussion in our next class. Thank you. Hare Krishna.